I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear an interview with April Gallup, who was working at the Pentagon when it was hit on September 11, 2001. April has a lawsuit against Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and General Myers. There was an appeal of the case that was heard in New Haven, Connecticut on April 5, 2011. I'm wondering why I haven't heard anything about that in the corporate media. Today we'll be talking about her experience on 9/11 and what's happened to her over the last 10 years since she experienced that horrible event. April was on her way to work after being on maternity leave for a few months. She was going to drop her son off at daycare and then go to the Pentagon where she worked, but was asked by her boss to report to work first to take care of a few things, and then she could drop her son off at daycare later. So she headed to the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001, instead of taking her son to daycare. April, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You were in the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001. Could you tell us what you experienced there and what happened to you that day? And also, what was your job title?
At that time, I was an administrative specialist at a top secret with SCI Access. So, again, there were other things that I had the ability to do.
And then what happened? I know you were driving into work with your son, but you were going to take him to daycare first, and then they called you and asked you to go to work?
Actually, they wanted me to take care of a couple of things before I went to enroll him in the daycare. And so I was diverted from doing that. So I went to the particular office to take care of the requested items. But before I could even do anything, boom.
An explosion went off?
An explosion, yes.
Okay. And are you sure it was an explosion and not the plane supposedly hitting American Flight 77?
Again, for me being on the inside, I put my finger on the computer, not even all the way in, and just boom. So I, you know, there was no window, so I have no way of knowing other than what I was told later that it was a plane. I wasn't able to see out a window. I really don't even know. I didn't witness it. I wasn't an eyewitness to the plane hitting the building.
I understand that you and your child were both injured in this, and when you were leaving the building after the plane had supposedly hit it, you walked through the hole where the plane had hit it, and you didn't see any plane parts. Maybe you could talk about that, what you did see.
Like I said, after it happened, meaning the after effect, you know, I was covered in rubble, office equipment, books, desk, chairs. So I had to low crawl out from all of the stuff, and it was dark, of course, and there were many people saying, help me, save me, I'm stuck, can't get out. So there was a lot going on at that time. And then my son stopped crying, and there were other people there. We were trying to get other people who had been trapped in between the floors or in between debris. We were trying to get everybody out, but it was kind of very hard. But I made one last effort to get my son out. I reached down, and I just grabbed his onesie. And so there was no science to that. It was just a random act. But as I was walking out, I didn't have any shoes on. I had one shoe. And as I was coming out, I just saw office stuff. Broken glass everywhere, computer faces that were busted, things to that effect. When I got outside of the hole, I collapsed to the ground. There was a gentleman who caught my son, and I fell to the ground because, again, it's almost like when I felt like I was safe, and I mean, this is just me rationalizing in hindsight, it just felt like somebody had taken a hammer and beaten me from my head all the way down. So I collapsed when I came out, and a gentleman grabbed my son, and then they moved us a little bit away from the building and left us on the grass. So I was on the grass for, I wasn't one of the first set of people that were triaged from the Pentagon. There were helicopters coming in to triage people to get them to care. And then they were trying to pull people from the highway to get people to take people to the hospital. You know, but I was there. I was on the grass. I came to. They resuscitated my son back, and someone held him. And then I came back to, and I was just looking around, but I just saw people just walking around trying to get people to the hospital. So even in that moment, there's nothing from those glimpses of me even seeing a pail or a, just nothing.
No luggage, no...
No, nothing. Yeah. And so I finally get triaged to the hospital, and of course we have to do accountability on soldiers. They have to know where they are. They're kind of AWOL until they're located. And I was told later that evening what had happened when they came to account my body, because first of all, I was reported dead on arrival at another location. But at the location where I was at, I was a patient, unknown patient number one and number two, and my son was unknown patient number three. So later when the military, each official from the military came around and they finally got to my room, they asked me, did I know what happened? And I was like, no. But can I get some care? Because I was hurting, hadn't had pain meds, hadn't been cleaned up or anything. And then they was like, this is what happened. And so I knew by word of mouth. I didn't witness anything. And then walking through, I didn't see anything. And then I was laying on the grass. I didn't see anything. But now I don't know if my angles had something to do with that. I don't know. But I know I didn't see anything. And so... when I made the statements that I made, it was because of an experience. It wasn't because, well, they treated me so terrible, now I want to retaliate, or I've become anti-government because of what happened. It was just, this was my experience. And the things that I was told seemed so, like, really? Like, it was just so hard for me to believe. And then the statements were so, I can't believe that was said. And so that's what started the journey. The experience started the journey.
And so... you were interviewed by the 9/11 Commission?
What happened, like I said, it's a different process for military people. They had to account for everyone, and then they begin what is called a military medical board. And that's where they determine who's at fault. Did you have any fault at all? Then they evaluate your injuries, determine if they're going to keep you in the military and fix you up, or you're going to get out with a percentage. And so I was going half a day for treatment for myself and the other half for my son. And, of course... many of us was going to the Pentagon Clinic. So we all were able to talk. We were able to put pieces of what happened together. And then official statements started coming out and things just wasn't making sense. And so we started pushing Congress to say, hey, we need to find out exactly what happened. This was our experience. And then we continued to do that until, it wasn't just myself, it was other 9/11 survivors, 9/11 family members. So it was more of a concerted effort happening all at the same time. We would see each other going through the halls of Congress, and then we'd meet at lunch and just say, how's it going? What did you get? What did you find out? So it was a concerted effort. It wasn't planned. It just all of us had concerns. We all had questions. Mm-hmm. And all we knew is to contact our congressperson. This randomness just started that way. We need to find out what's happening. We need to find out, well, this doesn't make sense because this is what we know. And so thus came the commission. What they did was they assigned people to commissioners to make sure whatever questions we had, I mean, we were not guaranteed to get all our questions answered, but they wanted to make sure many of our questions were answered through one of the commissioners. And I was assigned to Jamie Gerlich. So my questions were filtered through her. So out of all my questions, I thought the very key ones were asked, which was there a stand down order? Did you order the stand down? And so that's where that came from. And of course, there were closed hearings and there were open hearings. There were meetings, so many meetings. We met with so many people. Most of them were closed, where they would just allow survivors and family members. So a lot of that went on for a while. And so in one of those particular hearings, you know, the news people generally would wait outside. They had like a certain place that they could have their camera. And so I was talking to someone, and then the news reporter walked up. And I had just made a comment while they were talking to this particular person. And I made a comment, and that comment resonated and was aired on the news, and then it wind up in a newspaper, but then it got back to my command channels. And so it was not very long after that when I was detained in what I call detaining mean, you could either be detained the appropriate manner or wrongfully detained. I was wrongfully detained because I wasn't taken to a prison. I wasn't taken to a jail. They didn't identify to me what thing I had committed. They just said, well, you're all on TV saying these things. They were talking very vague and very general. And I hadn't done anything, and they knew I was taking a lot of medication during that time. They picked me up without me letting my son's doctor know. They had even taken me. They'd taken me, having me left my child at the hospital, not telling the doctor where I was going, where I was at, not being able to call my son's babysitter to tell her to go get my child. They just wrongfully detained me, kept me in a room just to make a general statement about you all on TV making these comments. And that's it. It wasn't like they gave me specifics. What had I done to warrant the attention? I didn't have anything to eat. I had all this medication on my stomach, throwing up, and I wasn't released until that night. Because, again, my son's provider, I had left my bag, so someone at the hospital had called my emergency card for my son, and the provider had got my son, and so she started calling around, like, what's going on? Where's the child's mother? It was a residual effect, and I finally got released that night, but they continued to come get me for many, many days, and then it may have been 10 days later, they tried to go back to September 11, 2001 and say I was never there. They were trying to go all the way back to September 11, 2001 and say I was never there, pretty much just trying to erase everything that happened. I never got hurt in September 11th, and they were going to trump up this fraudulent accident and say, well, I wasn't there, and I have been AWOL since September 11, 2001 to current.
Wow.
So I had to fight that while I was trying to recover for both me and my child. And this really did happen. It really did happen. And, you know, I know it sounds like some scene in the movie, but this really happened. And it, you know, was a minor form of torment. But for me, at that particular time where my wounds were very fresh, I'd never been on medication, never been hurt to that degree before in my life. I was having adverse responses to the meds, them trying to adjust me, and then I'm going through all this stuff. And it was just unusual. Wouldn't let me eat, wouldn't let me have anything to drink, wouldn't let me call anybody, and they would keep me there from sunup to sundown with the effort of trying to keep me from talking to people.
This was more than one time they did this, then?
It was more than one time. And then they try to go so far back to count me AWOL and say I was never there. So I believe they were keeping me there during that time where they were trying to come up with this paperwork that would be backdated back to say, actually, I had been absent without leave for so long, they had no clue where I was. I had to fight that. I was spending, you know, I battled that issue up until 2003, and I finally got released. A medical board for a soldier is only supposed to take the maximum of 90 days from the incident. So really, by December, no later than January, I should have been medically released or returned to duty. Well, they had made a decision with my injuries that they were going to medically release me. The decision was made in October. And they started my medical board over like every 3 months. And so the system had got so problematic. How I endured that, I really don't know. And it was just more of I felt like I had to keep on going for my son because what they did was really torture. Even while I'm going through my medical board, yes, I received my pay, which is very good. But because they were trying to trump all this stuff about they didn't know where I was and all this type of stuff, they were just creating all kinds of problems as opposed to trying to support and follow their own regulations. They were violating their regulations even in that incident. They were violating regulations in that, and I was bringing it up over and over again, but it was just completely ignored.
And can I ask you, what was the comment that you said to the in this room at the 9/11 Commission hearings that they were so upset with?
That I appreciate the fact that one of my main questions, the stand-down order comment about, was answered. And so from this point, we can actually say either they were negligent, whether we can determine whether it was willful or not, we don't know, or it was intentional. And from a military standpoint of view, even though you have a particular job in the military, they can assign you to do anything. But most importantly, you're a soldier. You're trained for combat. You're trained to be a soldier. And so every soldier knows, whether they're in the Army, Air Force, Marines, you're always to remain in the ready. So it was just odd that this most secure building, or supposedly this most secure building in the world, had even been attacked. And then there supposedly had been this exercise going on. And then, you know, there are the fighter jets who everybody in the military knows that they do one of two things, either escort down or they shoot it down.
Right.
And so there was just so many protocols not followed here that for me it was like, okay, I'm a soldier. This is what I know, and this is like some of the most unusual statements I've ever heard considering our protocols that we have that are in black and white, that are in regulations, that are in combat field guides. So I was looking at it from a soldier's position.
And so did anyone in the 9/11 commission ask you what you saw, what your experience was about these protocols? Did they?
No. They just said they couldn't guarantee all my questions would get asked, but I was to give my questions and concerns to Ms. Jamie Gorlick, and I did. Not all my questions got answered, only a few.
You as an eyewitness, they never bothered to ask you your experience and to talk about what you saw?
No. Now, there was someone at one point in time who was trying to get me appointed to the commission, but then later it was like, no, never mind. We think we have enough people, and then most of the people that they had were from the Navy, which was no issue to me, but I still made myself available to them regardless. But no, all I knew was if I had questions or concerns, they were to go to this particular person.
And now tell me, are you satisfied with the 9/11 commission report?
Actually, no. As time went by, it got more and more disappointing because what we couldn't understand was, one, why were they able to testify but not under oath? And then for the hearings that we sat in, some of the questions were very yes and no. And they would tap dance around it and start talking about make these long speeches about non-related to the question. At that point, it had just got really disturbing because they would sit there and allow that. So we kind of knew or start feeling inside that this was going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was the point. And so we meaning myself and other family members, we met and we discussed the disgruntlement and we discussed that this was going in another direction, not like we had hoped. And so it was becoming very disappointing. And then there was a member who was very expressive and felt like it was set up to fail in the beginning. And so at some point it got really like, okay, it looks like that pretty much at this point. And it just started a whole nother, we'll keep lobbying on these issues until we get the answers.
Yeah, so I understand that you have a lawsuit that you brought against Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and General Myers, and I guess a few others. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that and why you filed that suit.
Again, because of the failure of the commission. When the final report came out, of course, that was very thick. And then all the notes and the information of what we were able to read. So after reviewing all of that information over a long period of time, we felt like, okay, they were set up to fail. And now we need to try to find what are the next available steps. And so it was the next available step, litigation. Even though when we were counting up the costs, we had certain expectations. But the goal was to use whatever avenues that we had available because the other ones had failed.
And so why Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and General Myers?
And that's just because the information that was made available in the commission. You can make certain reasonable assumptions, but that's just it. It's just an assumption. What we could go by was the fact that Dick Cheney had been placed in a certain position months prior. We know that he was in this particular room at this particular time when the gentleman was doing the countdown.
So you're talking about the president's emergency bunker under the White House?
Yes. And so we had to use what information was made available through the commission, wiping out, well, this is what we believe, this is what we think. So we took pieces of that information that was made public through the commission and said, okay, at least we can come to this conclusion. At the end of the day, when all else failed, he had an opportunity to protect the Pentagon. And for whatever reason, we don't know, you know, frozen feet, fear. I don't know. I'm not here to make that conclusion. He was in this particular position. He had an opportunity to do something up until the last minute, and he did nothing. And that's just odd for someone in charge at such a very critical time, considering they knew that the World Trade Center had been attacked.
So you're talking about when he was in the bunker there in the White House?
Yes.
And the aide coming over and say the plane's 15
yes.
miles out, 30 miles out, et cetera. And then when it was about 10 miles out, the aide said, do the orders still stand?
Yes.
And he said, did you hear me say anything to the contrary or something to that effect? And then the plane hit the Pentagon.
Right. So even when we rule out every other possibility and every other protocol, he was in a position to do something when the plane was 50 miles out. And so he did absolutely nothing. And what people don't know is those fighter jets are pretty fast. Even with the fighter jet that were already sent out, they were fast enough to where they would have been able to catch the one at the Pentagon. And regardless, in the day, again, when we go down to the final minute, he still had an opportunity to do something. And so it comes to, we know when someone is a president of a club and something happens within that club, there's a certain responsibility that goes to that person. He was in this particular position on this day, so he should be accountable for that incident because he was in charge. It's not about trying to defame him or personally attacking him. It's about you take responsibility when you take certain positions of leadership. And since you were sitting in the chair, you could have done something when the plane was 10 minutes out, and you chose to do nothing. So it wasn't about trying to make him seem like something that he's not, but it was just more of, it's about your role as a leader. It's about you were in this leadership position at this time. You had an opportunity, even when the plane was 5 miles out, to do something, and you did absolutely nothing, knowing that that building had not been evacuated.
And they hadn't even notified people in the building, right?
No alarms, no nothing, just nothing. It's like we were sitting ducks.
Yeah, that's pretty disturbing.
Exactly. I mean, Okay, the truth is hard to swallow, but this was about my journey, and it is about my experience, and it is about nothing else. I'm not trying to create anarchy.
I understand. I understand what you're saying.
And I just hate that the whole situation has evolved into this whole thing that it's not.
You're just looking for some justice, some answers.
That's it. I mean, they had meetings with us and was telling, okay, you're not going to have to worry about anything during your recovery. At some point, they knew many of us were going to be medically released. That means we were losing our housing, clothing, food allowances, gaining medical expenses while losing insurance. And so, yeah, we had concerns. What are we going to do from this incident? It wasn't like a car accident. You file through insurance. They determine who the blame is. This was a large event, and people had very real concerns. And then you had all these organizations who were supposed to have met with us, told, okay, no, just give us your information. We had to verify we were actually there every 3 months. And I'm still appealing for much of those funds. Still appealing in 2011.
10 years later, and you still haven't received the funds?
Still appealing. And so you have to say, well, what is this all about? This is a very large issue, and people detach themselves from it because they were not directly involved. This was a larger picture issue. You don't allow your fellow Americans to experience the incident, regardless of how you feel, and you leave them to go homeless or you leave them to struggle, but then every 9/11 you're out having prayer at the pole and then inviting these same people that you ignore to show up. But then when we spend time lobbying, saying, okay, well, what about this and what about this and what about this and what about that, we're relying on you. We're trying to let you see what our real journey was like so we can get these reforms in place. And you just watch this, well, there's so much going on. I mean, that was a major incident. And the whole experience and the whole journey was disturbing.
I can imagine. I really admire your courage for keeping going with this and trying to get some answers for yourself. I wanted to ask you, your trial, you began in December of 2008 with this trial against Cheney Rumsfeld Myers. And recently, a Judge Chin in New York dismissed it. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, and then you appealed it, and the appeal was heard on April 5th in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yes.
And you don't know the results of that yet.
No, we're still waiting on that.
Okay.
But again, I mean, there's some current concerns that we have about that because of the relations. One of the judges and him being a cousin of the former president.
So Judge John Walker, you're referring to, who's a cousin of former President Bush.
Yes.
And I understand your lawyer tried to get him dismissed for conflict of interest, and that didn't succeed.
It was denied, yes.
Now, has anyone in the corporate media wanted to interview you about this trial?
Not that I'm aware of.
Nobody's contacted.
Not that I'm aware of, unless they've contacted Mr. Veal, and maybe he hasn't informed me. But as of today, not that I'm aware of. I did have an incident where a reporter tried to reach out to me regarding the situation and to share the journey so that people would really know what was going on, to maybe change how people give, maybe change people's mind to to help them see how to get involved, how they could be helpful at this point. But then again, the Pentagon officials informed them not to speak to me.
Were you told by the Pentagon or anybody to not tell your story?
It wasn't done in that way. Again, while I was being wrongfully detained, sun up to sundown, they didn't say things specifically. They spoke inadvertently. You don't need to be out here talking about these particular things. But they didn't say, we're telling you not to. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right, right. But they were then detaining you for days.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to be like, okay, this is, well, first of all, I wasn't going to say anything. Because again, I was hungry. I had all these pills on me. I was throwing up. So I wasn't trying to make anybody mad. I didn't know what was going to happen next. I didn't know if I was going to get a... I didn't know what was going to happen. I was thinking all types of things at that time. I didn't know if somebody was going to come in and punch me. I mean, I really didn't know. So it wasn't much I was going to say. I wasn't going to ask 50 questions like, so what does that mean?
That must have been very frightening.
Exactly. Because
yeah.
I couldn't even call my son's child care provider. How cruel it was. They detached me from my child and would let me call anybody for nothing. I committed no crime, hadn't done anything, and they did this to me. Mm. After I was trying to focus on my recovery, and it just was cruel.
How do you keep going, April? What keeps you...
My son. You know, if I was by myself, I don't know that I just don't know. It's like it's a very hard thing to speculate, but I look at my son, and I look at his face, and I say, things have got to be better. And if my pain is a fuel, instead of misdirecting it and letting it turn volatile or turn into bitterness, I just use it to do proactive things. The case, following up on the issues, staying in front of Congress, and it works a whole lot better than just keeping it on the inside and just letting it burn there. Because again, at the end of the day, I didn't cause what happened. I know I didn't do it. So I didn't even see the point in harming me. I didn't even see what this was all about. And then at the end of the day, is this what you do to your fellow American when something of this magnitude takes place? Whether you slipped up and you have a problem as a leader saying, wow, I messed up that time or I made a bad call, you still think that this is the best way to treat people? Really? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what you do? Now, if it was a car accident, like I said, I had other alternatives, but I was left with a child that needed rehabilitation. I needed rehabilitation. I was losing my job for something that wasn't my fault, gaining expenses while losing an income and my housing allowance and my clothing allowance, and you're going to have me spend years in appeal, but then treat me like I'm un-American? So it's like, no, you're un-American because you shouldn't treat people this way for something that's not their fault. I had no part in this whatsoever. I was distinguished honor grad. I exceeded the standards in my service. It's already hard enough for a woman to be in the military. That's a whole nother interview. But regardless of it all, I didn't see what this really was all about, except for the statements that I made, except for the steps that I was taking.
Right. It sounds like there's a cover-up going on.
Right.
From what's the truth.
But they make it look that way. I didn't make them go out and give contradictory statements.
You've just been listening to an interview with April Gallup. Tune in next week to hear the final part of that interview. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.